You're telling me what to do with my arms and my legs, but at the core of it, I feel like I'm going to die. So how am I possibly supposed to have the attention for my arms and legs if I think I'm going to die? People are so relieved when we stop talking about the arms and the legs and really peel back the layers to find out what's at the core of it. Then we can take care of it and it's done. And then we can start building stuff back up again.
Hi, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. On the show, you get my conversations with peak-performing thought leaders, creatives, and entrepreneurs. Every week, I bring you the latest scoop on what these incredible people do to succeed and how you can get their secrets and do it too. Whether we're talking about best practices for spending time creating, how to work the business part of your business, or how to keep in that innovative mindset so you can keep living and performing, you'll get practical and wise information to use in your work and in your life. And now, let's get on with the show. Hey there, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. My name is Isolde Trachtenberg, and I'm your host, and I am thrilled that you're here. I'm also thrilled to welcome this week's guest. Corey Mica is the co-owner of the Orca Swim School, and she's the creator of the Foundations of Change learning method. For over 20 years, Corey has been taking adult non-swimmers, I love that, from fearful beginning to realizing their wildest dreams. Her unique teaching is so highly regarded because it's based on training and healing the mind so you can learn physical steps, taking swimming beyond the pool and into your life. Based in Seattle, Washington, Corey has been training students and teachers locally and across the USA, as well as in the United Kingdom and Singapore. Corey, I'm so thrilled that you're here. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here too.
There's so much to unpack in just what it is that you're doing. You teach adults to swim, but it seems like there's a lot more to it. What is it that you're actually teaching your students?
Yes. That is such a great question, because that's one of the first conversations we have with our students of what is it that we're really doing here? Well, it looks like we are teaching people what to do with their arms and their legs. What we're really teaching them what to do is to have trust with themselves and to really understand how to connect their thinking part of themselves and their bodies. Right, to really bring those two things together so they can really build this trust with themselves so they can figure out, it's the idea of teaching them how to fish instead of giving them fish. Mm-hmm. They can figure out from themselves how to do the next step, how to make stuff up, how to get their safety from themselves instead of external things.
Oh, I love what you just said, how to get their safety from themselves instead of external things. So if someone who's afraid of the water, I'm going to use my mom as an example. She's lifelong fear of swimming. Mm-hmm. And for her, it's a fear of the water going into her ears. That seems to be the thing that she's most afraid of. How do you help a student overcome a very specific fear like that of just being in the water?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's understanding where they are right now. And so it's kind of unpacking and seeing what are all the beliefs and the questions that need to be answered. And then it's also understanding. So in terms of your mom, I mean, with that example of your water in your ears, there is something that she's concerned about there. You know, she mm-hmm. may have heard something, or she has a belief about what that's like, or how it's a problem. Mm-hmm. So something like that can oftentimes be helped by simple information. But then there's also understanding the emotion that is going to come with this physical sensation, right? When somebody puts their ears in the water, there's going to be a physical sensation to that. And we want to know what our emotional response is going to be to that, and how do I deal with that emotional response? In the beginning, right, it may be your fight or flight is triggered for it. You're acting as if there's a danger, there's something very dangerous about it. And knowing how that system operates, so you can be in the presence of feeling, am I really in danger? Or is my brain just feeding me that I'm in danger? And to start to bring that to light, so we can come back to a calm, neutral place that can just identify, oh, this is the sensation of my ear in the water.
Fascinating. So when you do that, when you help your students, as you said, come back to that calm place, what are some ways that a person might achieve that calm space when they're afraid, when they're already afraid, when they're already having that fight or flight? What would be the first thing that you'd say to someone who's in the middle of that fight or flight, that parasympathetic nervous system needing to come into play? Mm-hmm. When the sympathetic nervous system is the thing that holds sway right now, what would you say to someone to go, okay, let's chill out? What's the first step there?
Yeah, well, the big thing there is we're not going to let them go that far down the road. Uh-huh. Okay. To begin with, right? We are going to start this conversation in a place where they cognitively know that they're safe, mm-hmm. right? So that's why all of our lessons start with conversations. Outside of the water, online, or on the pool deck, depending on the scenario. But we're really starting with the conversation there so that we can unpack the concepts at first, so they have a new perspective. And then it's really giving them permission to be in charge of their experience, right? That they really want to look to themselves and see, okay, am I curious about taking the next step? And if I feel, yes, I am really curious about it, I can lean into this. And I'm really honoring where I'm at, then I'll take that next step. If the answer is no, I also get to listen to this, and I need to listen to this, because this is where my questions and my concerns come up. We can answer those questions and concerns that help settle us back into our bodies. And then that's the other key piece is fear and panic is usually, it's about the future or the past. Mm. It doesn't usually exist in the present. And so for people to key into, what I'm concerned about is in the future, there's gonna be a problem with my ears, let's say. But right now, let me understand and get the information. There actually is no problem with my ears right now. And I get to choose the pace that I go, and I get to choose what feels safe, what I can continue to connect into the present physical moment.
I love that there's such a deep psychology around what you're doing, and also that you help your students with a sense of agency, that they have choices. Yes. And I love that. And I'm wondering, how did you start this? What made you decide, you know what, I'm going to look at agency and the psychology of self-confidence and self-determination through swimming? How did you come to that point?
Well, so I've been teaching swimming forever. almost literally, my mom has a story of, I think when I was 6 years old and we were on a houseboat and my aunt didn't want to get into the water. And I said, it's okay, Aunt Mavis, I'll teach you how to swim.
I love it.
So I've really been doing this a long time. And so I'm pretty good at it, right? I understand how to break the strokes down. I understand how the water works. Like, I get all these physical components. Mm-hmm. And I could get an adult to swim across the pool. They were doing the thing. And we'd get to the other side and I'd say, well, how was it? And they'd say, I have no idea. Hmm. And I thought, what the heck? I am doing something wrong here. They're doing everything that I'm telling them to do. They're doing all of the actions, but yet they still are not connected to it. They don't feel like a swimmer. They don't feel safe somehow, even though they can do the thing. And so that's where I really started getting that question of, what is the missing link here? And I really, inquired about that. What is really missing? And it's really finding out, oh, it's this mind-body connection. They're missing understanding their beliefs and understanding how to take care of that mental piece of it. And so that really brought in the inquiry there of, if I really truly want to teach people to swim or truly want to teach people to feel free in the water the way I do, I have to have that piece of the equation in there. It's not just moving your arms and legs.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, to keep coming back to my mom, hopefully she won't be too upset that I'm using her as such an example. It's so fascinating how much the mind, the brain has sway here. Because, for example, teaching her how to swim, she could not separate her feet moving at the same speed as her arms. So either she dog paddled and her feet moved quickly, or she tried to do a stroke slowly and then her feet would also stroke slowly, and then suddenly she was below the surface of the water because she just couldn't hold herself aloft that way. So I'm wondering, when you're working through this and you're teaching someone who's an adult, they have to go through all of these changes. They have to accept that their mind, that their brain is the most powerful part of all of this. What steps do you take? What are the foundations of that process for you that let you or help you give them the help they need to both separate it and to find the confidence to do it?
Yeah, well, I love the example that you gave of your mom, because it's a very classic one in terms of somebody was, I don't know if you were trying to teach her, somebody else was trying to teach her. And you just described a whole lot of actions, arms and legs. But yet underneath that is the thing you said earlier, which is she's afraid of putting her ears in the water.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so how is she possibly, if she has an underlying thought that says, if my ears go in the water, something terrible is going to happen. Water's going to go to my brain and it's going to be infected, or, I don't know exactly what it is for her, but she has some thought about that. Mm-hmm. And so she's holding on to that while trying to do these things with her arms and legs. It's sort of like, and so there's this cognitive dissonance of, you're telling me what to do with my arms and my legs, but at the core of it, I feel like I'm going to die. So how am I possibly supposed to have the attention for my arms and legs if I think I'm going to die? So it's, people are so relieved when we stop talking about the arms and the legs and really peel back the layers to find out what's at the core of it, then we can take care of it and it's done. And then we can start building stuff back up again. And we're constantly in that process of seeing, okay, we're gonna build up, we're gonna build up. Oh, hang on, a new belief is revealed here. Let's unpack that, open that up, get that taken care of, and then we can keep moving forward again. So people are really relieved by not having that conversation of learning the front crawl and doing all these things. It's just, it's so much and it's so overwhelming for people. Just pulling it back, making it simple, is such, that in and of itself is expanding for people.
Oh, that's great. This idea of peeling back the onion, as it were. And yet it sounds to me like you're taking the steps and making them normalized. Like we don't try to jump into the 10-foot deep water. We go slowly, we go step by step, and then we look at if something comes up, I guess, as resistance or fear, then you look at it. Now I read that you believe fear is normal. I'd love to know what makes it normal for you, and what are some steps that you might encourage a student to work through the fear?
Yeah. So, I mean, fear is normal like any other emotion, right? Ones that we describe as positive or negative. It's part of the spectrum of feelings that makes up the human experience. Mm-hmm. And there are times when fear is very useful. Right. I have a fear that if I stick my hand in the fire, that something bad's going to happen. So I don't stick my hand in the fire. Right.
Yes. Fair enough.
So it's really good. When my toddler is, we're going out down to the street, I have a fear they're going to get hit by a car. So I pay more attention to my toddler when we go out onto the street than if we're playing in the backyard that's all fenced in or something, right? It's a useful emotion for us to be on the lookout for things. Mm-hmm. Where it's not useful is when it goes into this hyperdrive and it's just in a habit place. I have the habit of feeling fear of being in the water, even though nothing bad or nothing unsafe is actually happening right now. I'm too far ahead. So we use the fear to say, okay, like you said, we're not going to start with jumping into the 10 feet of water. That would be terrifying. And if you don't know how to bring yourself back to calm, it really wouldn't be a good idea to start out with jumping into 10 feet of water.
For sure.
So it's a good tool in that way. Okay, that's too much. No judgment around it. It's not a big deal. It's totally fine. It's not time yet to jump into the 10 feet of water. So again, that pulling back those layer of the onions. What is the thing that I can stay in my body for, that I can stay present for, that I can stay in a calmer, more neutral place for, so I can start to understand it? And we can use that fear as the buffer, as the signal. Whoop, too much. That's all right. I'm expanding to that area. Come into the areas that I do feel the feeling that I want to have, which is for most people, comfort and fun and curiosity.
Interesting. I agree with you completely that comfort, fun, and curiosity are better than than terror and fear and horror, of course. And yet, for some people, it seems like it's impossible. Like for my mom, she's 80 years old. It's impossible. I don't think she's ever going to learn to swim because the fear is too great. And yet, you've helped people who've had those kinds of fears achieve that impossible and make this something that is full of fun and full of curiosity for them. How do you do that? How do you break it down for them so that they can overcome what feels like, I'm sure, I've never had a fear of the water, so I don't quite understand it, but what I'm sure is overwhelming. How do you break it down for them so that they can do that?
Yes. So one of the questions that people haven't really looked at is when we first have a conversation is we look at where they want to go, right? I want to be able to jump off the back of the boat. I want to be able to go snorkeling in Hawaii, or I want to be able to get into the shallow water and not feel panicky, you know, whatever their goal is, really big or smaller. I don't want to use the word small because it's, but at any rate, so we look at that and then we really say, well, how do you want that to feel? And that's something that people haven't really considered, is the way they want it to feel. And then we connect back to the present time and see, all right, what space, what place are you able to feel in that way? Are you able to feel calm? That's one of the things, you know, calm, cool, and collected. People usually are in that zone. Also fun is usually in that zone too, but really at the core of it is I want to feel grounded and connected. So we look for that. Okay. When you're sitting here in the chair, like really just feel your body in the chair and see, is your body safe right here, right now in the chair? You know, feel your feet, feel your butt in the chair. And your brain will jump ahead and say, yeah, but when I get in the water, it's going to feel terrible. Okay, got it. But let's come back to right here and right now. And so people can start to notice, oh, right, this is what it feels like to be in my body right now. And this is when I do that, I actually do feel calm. I do feel cool and collected. I do feel in control of my body. And so then we can build from there only with the steps that they feel curious about and safe about. And so getting back to that idea of having permission, of really having full and complete permission to say yes and to say no. Mm-hmm. And that's that building, that honoring, and that trust. We know when people are doing that, that they will learn and they grow. And we have full trust and belief in that. And we, so students can kind of borrow that from us to start with until they start to believe in it for themselves. So it's really unpacking those early, early steps in that very slow, very tender way. And that's where they start to build their own autonomy around that. But we just cannot, we have to take them out of this, this view of what learning to swim is, which is doing all these things that I'm not going to like to do.
I'm fascinated. So in that transition though, like it sounds to me like this is, and you know, probably your students start a real deep meditation practice after having taken your class, because it sounds like you're helping them build a response mode instead of a reaction mode, and helping them build self-awareness in the moment, and being in the present moment allows them to do that. And yet, I guess, how does that process then work when you say, okay, now it's time to get up out of the chair? You're comfortable in the chair, mm-hmm. and you feel like in the present moment, you're safe and you're curious perhaps, but now we're going to stand up and we're going to move towards the pool, for example. How do you deal with whatever comes up there? Is it the same kind of peel back the onion of whatever's happening right now, or are there other steps to take?
Yeah, it is still that peel back. I mean, first of all, it starts with asking them if they're interested in going, in talking about getting into the pool, mm-hmm. right? It's back to that permission. So if they are interested, and most of the time they are, right? They've shown up with that intention. They know if I want to learn to swim, I'm going to go to the pool. I'm going to get in the water. Right. So they do have some, you know, desire around that. Mm-hmm. But I ask the question in the way that really, again, gives them permission that it's okay if we don't go to the water in this moment. It just means that you have something else that needs to get taken care of first. You have another question. You have a concern. We need to unpack a little bit more until you're ready for the yes. And that's totally fine, because we really trust that when people listen to their answer, that they, again, they will grow and they will learn. And so I'm very unattached to what their answer is. If it's a yes, let's get in, or no, I'm not ready to get in. I'm there to just meet them exactly where they are. And then we do things too, of course, to introduce the pool, that we take the time to show them, you know, here's where the shallow end is. Here's where the deep end is. In many of our pools, the edges are curved. And so I let people know things like, well, if you're in the 5-foot section up against the wall, you could stand up easily. When you go towards the middle, it's going to be a little bit deeper. So they can vision things. All of these, when you get into the water, or any space, but in the water in particular, there's lots and lots of sensations that happen on your body. And usually in traditional swim lessons, nobody pays attention to them. They just move on to doing a bunch of things. But we actually spend some time noticing those things and feeling those things, because the body takes in that information and is reacting to that, whether or not we pay attention to it. So mm-hmm. we take the time to pay attention to it, to normalize it, to see it as, oh, this is just how the slope of the pool works. And now you get to choose, do I want to be in the 2.5 feet, or do I want to be in the 5 feet? Or because where do I feel better in? Where do I feel more in control? Where can I stay in feeling sensations versus going to this fight or flight danger mode. So we really take the time to explore each of these things, asking permission every step of the way so the student really feels in charge and is really listening to themselves.
It's so interesting to me that comfort seems to be so primary to what you do, that each step of the way, the student is learning to be comfortable, or at least accepting that they could be, that they might be. And I'm also fascinated. I actually have thought this myself about how differently you move in the water versus in the air. There's just so much more resistance. So mm-hmm. when someone is in the 5-foot water, for example, it's a moment, it seems to me, where they can sort of acknowledge for themselves that they've achieved something. You know what I mean? That I'm here and I wasn't ready last week or whatever, but now I'm here and I'm able to do this. What is the process of acknowledging that for the student? How do you guide them to understand what they've achieved?
Yeah. You know, at the end of our sessions, we do look back and we say, what did you feel today that you had never felt before in the water? As you say, just simply being in the water has all of these sensations that go with it. The buoyancy, the resistance, you move differently in the water than you do on land. I mean, we're having a conversation. My pool is outside right now. We didn't cover it this year because of COVID. And, you know, so when we're talking, people are down low and squatted in the water because they don't want to have their shoulders in the air. Mm-hmm. And so you get to be in this position, this squatty position that you would never do on land, because most of us don't have those powerful thighs to be in a squat like that.
At least not for too long.
Yes. And, So we ask that question, like, to see, what did you feel in the water today that you haven't felt before? What have you done in the water today that you didn't have any awareness of before? To do just the thing that you're talking about, to give them a moment to reflect back and to see, oh yeah, well, I've been in the water before. Most of my clients have been in water before, again, like your mom, you know, has experiences in it. But I was so in terror, or I was so in worry or concerned, or so in shame or embarrassment or all these other things, that I never did actually notice how the water works. Like, I never actually noticed that I can change how I walk. I walk differently in the water than I do on land. I just knew how to do that. The teacher didn't have to teach me that. I just figured it out. But I had never noticed that I could do that before, because I just wasn't present to it before. I was in all these other places.
Sure. In what you said, I love what you said about fear being about the past or the future, rarely about the present. And yet, when you're in that space of kind of going, wow, this is what I've achieved, acknowledging what you have achieved, that the water is different, that you're comfortable, it's, for some students, I imagine it's about achieving, if these are adults especially, and I want to remind myself right now that I would love to talk to you about why you stopped teaching kids and focus on adults. But this idea of adults achieving what for many is a lifelong dream, that's pretty wild. That's pretty amazing that you're helping people who, in some ways, like my mom, have given up. Mm-hmm. On achieving the dream of being able to be comfortable in the water, much less swimming in the water. So what is that? What's happening to people as they achieve those dreams, achieve those goals? How do you guide them through that process and the acknowledgement of achieving it?
Well, sorry, I'm just thinking, I'm like, it's the same. I feel like I'm going to repeat myself here. This very step-by-step process and very acknowledging process and not shaming process, and allowing them really to be who they are, knowing that how they show up, you know, is totally perfect. And, you know, our students Although they wouldn't describe themselves like this, I'm sure, because they're just regular humans. But I really see them as the most amazing people ever, because they don't have to come out and learn how to do this, right? You could spend your whole life just saying, yeah, it's not for me. But these are people who say, no, I know I am capable. I have a lot of what you'd call type A people and very highly successful people. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of gnaws at them. Like, why can't I do this thing that looks so simple? And they don't just ignore that. They say, yeah, I'm gonna do something with this. I know it's possible. Deep inside of them, they know it's possible. And that's part of what we connect to with them as well, that they don't feel like a swimmer, but they know somewhere, and it's pretty hidden oftentimes, there's got to be a swimmer in here somewhere, because there's nothing actually wrong with me as a human being, but it really seems like there is because I can't get this thing. So just that, using that inquisitive place and tapping into that very hidden, very quiet belief of themselves of being capable, even though they've spent maybe 80 years building evidence that they're not capable.
Yeah. And I keep coming back to my mom. It's for her, she did eventually swim, but she never lost her fear of the water. Mm-hmm. And I think in part, it's because she went, okay, I took my swim class, I swam from one end of the pool to the other, and I'm done. You know, it feels to me like something like that, something, either the fear or the practice, needs to be practiced. I don't know if every day, but at least you need to stay consistent. What do your students do after they're done with your session? Do most of them sort of go, okay, I did it, I'm done? Or have you found that they make this goal something that they keep practicing on and are mindful of much more often in the future?
Yeah, it's really easy to get caught back up, because our world really tells us to take care of surface things. You know, it's kind of like when we're recording this, it's in the holiday season, and the competition of who's got the best house decorations.
Ah, that, yes.
You know, as if that means that everything in your house is perfect and okay, right? That outward look of quote, keeping up with the Joneses, right? We get a lot of messages in the world that are around that. And so, like your mom has of this, oh, I swam across, I did the thing, that would be the keeping up with the Joneses. I can tick that off the list. I never, thank goodness, ever have to do that again. there certainly are percentage of students that come through, and they're everybody, 100% of students, they're amazed. They cannot believe what they are able to accomplish. They can't believe, they're just delighted with how it feels, that it feels in a way that they never imagined themselves being able to achieve. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they do dry out. they don't really make a good plan for themselves to fit it into their lives. Mm-hmm. And then they come back a year or two later and they're like, oh yeah, now it's time for me to go on that vacation. And I realized I didn't stay in the practice of how to achieve that feeling. And their brain starts going over into just trying to make it look pretty on the outside. So they recognize, hang on, I forgot to practice it. And it's not practicing looking pretty, but practicing the deeper work. And so they come back to it. And then we have other students who are like, no, I want to practice not so much the swimming, but practice the mindfulness, the practicing mm-hmm. the system of how we learn, and really expanding themselves in that way. And they're using the tool of the swimming to practice that piece of it, that practice, how do I be in charge of what I feel? How do I understand what my thoughts and beliefs are?
Yeah, that idea, I keep coming back to that. The thing that sticks in my head is agency, feeling self-confident and in control of your own destiny. And it's interesting. in doing the research to have this conversation with you, Corey, I started thinking about when I got my scuba C card, and my dive master, who was a former Navy SEAL, told us he had all of these different criteria that we had to match. We had to swim a length of an Olympic-sized pool on one breath underwater. We had to swim for a mile, and we had to be able to tread water for 25 minutes. And he said that we couldn't be claustrophobic. And there were all of these things that we had to prove we could do before he'd even let us learn. And it's interesting to me that when you talk about fear in the water, there are different levels, right? So for someone who's afraid to swim, that's one thing. But what about someone who's like me? I'm not claustrophobic, and I did get my scuba C card. But what about someone like me who has to deal with a deeper level, both literally and figuratively, of all of a sudden you want to go further, you want to get your scuba certification, and now you have to have all these other skills. What do you do with someone who was coming to you for that kind of getting rid of those fears of going further and deeper?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, because it really works exactly the same. It's just a new set of beliefs that you're coming up against. I mean, the reason why we set goals for ourselves is less about achieving the goals, but more it's really developing who we are becoming or who we need to become on the way towards that goal. The goal really becomes sort of the icing on the cake. It's the, you know, why does it feel great to see the view at the top of the mountain? You know, you could drive to the top of the mountain and see the view, but you get a different sensation of that view when you've done the hard work of hiking up the mountain. You have a different appreciation for it, right?
Sure, sure.
So, I mean, this is why we set goals for ourselves. And the system of achieving it and transforming yourself is the same. It is seeing what are those thoughts and beliefs that we take into it, how does that feel in our body? And then from that, what actions do we have or what actions don't we have? And we can really then see, oh, this is producing a result. Sometimes it's the result that we want, and sometimes it's a result that we don't want. And we go back through that system to see it starts really with our thoughts and our beliefs. And we changing at that thought and belief level is what's really going to make a deep impact on our actions in the world. And so it's really unpacking that for somebody at any level, sticking their toe in the water or being able to do cave diving.
First, I love that. I think it's great that the system is sort of consistent. And yet that presence of mind that someone needs to have to access that within themselves in the moment, I've had a meditation practice for 25 years, and I am way guilty of reacting and not responding, of going in the moment rather than going, okay, I'm going to be like a guru up on the mountain and I'm going to stay calm. Is there a set of practices that you give people? Is there a technique that you can give someone who goes, I want to do this and I'm going to do it, but I know myself and I know that I'm going to go back into that reactive place rather than the more measured response place. What advice do you have for a student who wants to do that even after the classes are over?
For sure. This goes back to that question about fear being normal. Just so when you have this thought that says, well, I know myself and I'm going to have that response. Mm-hmm. So then the question is, well, what do you make that mean? You know, are you making that mean that there's a problem here or there's something wrong with you? Or are you making that mean, you know what, when something unexpected happens, it is normal for somebody to go, oh my gosh. And for you to just be able to feel whatever there is, not to make yourself wrong for, oh, what I'm feeling, I should be feeling guru and zen. No, you feel whatever you feel. Mm-hmm. You feel startled. You feel surprised. you feel whatever it is. And that sense of feeling and allowing yourself to just feel what is what stops you from continuing, let's say, to go to full-on panic. It puts the brakes on. Let me just feel what it is. Then I can start the process of slowing that down. But if we're resisting feeling what it is, we're making ourselves wrong. I should be guru Zen here. I should have this down. You know, we can should ourselves to to no good. But just allow, oh, I am feeling startled. Okay, got it. Now I'm connected to myself. Now I am here. I can then start the process of slowing that down and bringing it in.
I love that. Okay. So going deeper still, how does that sort of, and I'm going to call it a victory, how does that sort of victory help people in the rest of their lives? Like what lessons could I take if I went through your swimming class? What lessons could I take into the rest of my life from that, even just that little bit, but we could talk about the whole thing, but even just that little moment of going, this is what I feel. And now I can slow the other processes down and move from that more responsive place rather than reactive, the fight or flight. How would I use that? How could I use that into my life at work, my life with my family, my life and my relationships? What are your thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is the piece that, well, I don't have a fear in water, and I, you know, I know water like the back of my hand, but I practice this in my daily life, right? This system. So, yeah, I've just, I mean, I think about, you know, I got kids at home, and, you know, there are times where I'm yelling at my kid. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is not helping. This is like, he's down there playing the video games yet again. And I just like want to scream and go crazy. And then one path could say, oh, you're such a terrible mom, or, you know, this isn't the right thing to be doing. And I can be shaming myself and not having my own back. Or I can pause and say, oh yeah, I'm feeling really angry. And just allowing myself to feel what I'm feeling, then I can get curious, right? This is how I become the better parent, is to mm-hmm. see, okay, well, what's driving this sense of anger? Let me just be curious about it instead of pretending I'm not angry or just, exploding all over him. Or I did explode all over him. I can't do anything about that now. That is done. but I can get curious about how I felt going into it, and that I didn't take the time to acknowledge that going into it. This allows me that openness to really, like I say, get curious about it then and not have judgment. Because when I have judgment about it, I'm not going to make any sort of change to it. There's no possibility that I would show up as a different kind of parent. So that's one of the ways that I do it, use it in my life. Or really in the practice of noticing what my thoughts are going into things, you know, having a conversation with my husband that my thoughts are all about myself versus, wait a second, I just love him. And he just gets to feel how he feels and I get to love him. It comes from a very different place. But it isn't until I get curious to see where I am that I have to just let myself see where I am presently to be able to then try on that intentional thought and try on reminding myself, oh, this isn't all of who I am.
You mean the anger isn't all of who you are, right?
The yeah. anger is not all of who I am, or yeah. the, yeah.
Whatever the feeling is, I guess. And, you know, I love what you just said. And you said it a few minutes ago, but it struck me that it's okay to feel how you feel. Whatever yes. it is you're feeling, it's okay to feel it. You don't necessarily have to act on that feeling, but you have to be okay, or maybe you get to be okay with how you feel. And I love that. And I think that that's, it is super helpful in all aspects of life, because you're going to, we're feeling beings, right? So we're going to have that sort of response, whatever it is, whatever the response is. And yet when we're in that place, though, if we're in that responsive place and we're trying to be okay with what we're feeling, if a student of yours comes to you and says, I feel X, whatever X is, what techniques do you give them to be okay with what they're feeling, instead of to judge themselves? Like you said, let's not do self-judgment, which I love also.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that? I mean, it's, I do it through creativity with my clients and in my workshops. I do the same kind of thing, but through creativity. How do you do it with swimming? Or is it not swimming, but just the process at that point that you're working through with them?
Yeah, well, it's really about getting curious. It's permission and curiosity.
Okay.
And that connecting to feel, because we are in this very tangible space. This is where I love using water to learn these lessons, because the cause and effect relationship is right there in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really getting curious with them of what they actually feel in their body, the physiology, because these emotions show up in our body too, right? As tension or a fast heart rate or a holding our shoulders up around our neck or whatever it is. So to really connect it in that space. And when you connect to it in the physiology of your body and mm-hmm. in the naming the emotions and just being curious about it, the natural thing that happens is that it starts to slow down.
Hmm.
And so we see this time and time again. People are really worried that if I allow myself to feel, let's say, anxiety, that I'm going to be stuck in it forever. Mm-hmm. It's going to be terrible, and it won't move through me, and I'll be lost in it forever. It'll be so horrible. But the truth is, it's the resistance to feeling something that keeps us stuck.
Mm.
And when we actually allow ourselves to feel it, this gives it a chance to move. And so really giving people permission around that. Sometimes I talk about feelings that are on the other side of the spectrum, like joy, you know, overwhelming joy or excitement. We generally, most people, although some people do resist feeling those things on the positive side too, but generally speaking, we don't resist feeling joy because we're not worried that I'm going to feel joyful and I'm never going to stop feeling joyful.
Oh, darn.
Right? I mean, we're just like, yeah, let me experience the joy because I'm going to experience it. I'm going to fill up on it. And then it's gonna kind of heighten, and then it will come back down and I'll go back to regular content or happy or, you know, or searching for the next joyful moment or whatever it is. But we're not worried that we're going to be lost in it forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the emotions that are on the flip side of that spectrum actually work the same way. But it's that resistance to feeling it that really holds it in place, that locks it there.
I have I'm at a fork in the road. I have two things I want to talk to you about, and I want to make sure that I talk to you about that too. So now I have three things. I want to know why you stopped teaching kids. I want to talk about what it is. How do I put this? So some of this might be people who have fear around water. Some of this people never got around to learning how to swim. What happens if someone has trauma around water? How do you approach it differently, or is it still the same process?
It's really the same process. And honestly, some people come that it's trauma around water, but it also, for a lot of people, it's trauma around something else.
Mm.
Because trauma is stored in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And And so when you put your body into a situation that might be, it's not even similar, but it just triggers the same patterns, that so other traumas can come forward. So we really do acknowledge that that can happen, that people's sense of their past traumas can come forward in this process. And just like everything in terms of allowing, that we're not asking people to come in and they have to rehash it or to ignore it, either one, but just it's a piece of allowing, of just feeling what you feel. You know, I had a woman who was going along, doing the lessons, she was progressing, things were going along, and she kind of hit a blocked place where she wasn't progressing as much. So we backed off a little bit and we slowed things up and really just paid attention to what she was feeling in her body. And she came up from under the water doing a float or whatever she was doing. And she said, "All those people died." And I said, "What?" Wow. And she said, a memory came to her of when she was a child. She was on a overloaded ferry boat. This was in another country. And she was looking out the window at another overloaded boat. And that other boat sank. Mm. And just the screams and the, you know, this trauma. And she's like, she hadn't thought about this. It didn't occur to her that that moment that she had witnessed as this very young child, a whole bunch of people dying. And so that came up just simply by feeling. And she happened to share it with me because she felt comfortable. She wanted to share it. And she then got to decide what to do with it, to process that and to feel it or not. We don't force anybody either direction. We really trust that what they are able and willing to feel in that moment is enough. And we don't have to like go through and do a big unpacking of it, but just knowing, feeling whatever you feel, that's enough. We can change the subject, you know, whenever she needed a break from it and changing the subject, that's fine too. So these things do come up. And like I say, sometimes people can really catch on to it and know what it is and can name a space and time. And other times they can't, but it's still just a matter of allowing for the presence of showing themselves. I can feel that tension in my body where this trauma resides. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to be wrong for it. I can just allow and it passes through. And that's healing for people. And they just take on bit by bit that they're ready for. And that's exactly the right way to go.
I love, love, love that. What a beautiful way of looking at it. It's so interesting to me that it's such a present experience, like this woman who had this memory surface for her. You were right there. And yet, you also teach people how to swim online. And I imagine right now, especially with COVID and everything, that a lot of people have had to do that, have had to take some of this online. How do you do that? How do you maintain that level of presence and consistency if someone is learning from you online? What's different? What's the same about that process for you?
Yeah, so the online experience is because we have gone through this so many times, you know, we know the questions that people have, and we really break down the experience into even smaller steps for the online, because we aren't there one-on-one with somebody to walk them through the process. So they are, as one of my students who did the online class, I'm in Seattle and she's in Vancouver, BC. And she said, "You know what? I feel like I learned more in the online process because I really had to learn to trust myself." She says, "I feel like if I went and did it with a teacher, I would expect the teacher to do that work for me, or that it was about trusting the teacher." And she just really appreciated that the lessons were broken down into such small steps that it gave her that space of saying, yeah, you really need to go at the pace that you can trust yourself and build that up along the way. And so people have, you know, they have this same or they have different kinds of results because of that process. So it's really knowing that people are and acknowledging for people that you're taking on whole deep levels, you know, many levels of learning. And then of course people fill out feedback forms and we answer their questions and I can read between the lines and of what they say and bring through and pull out what those deeper thoughts are that are going on that are seem like helpful thoughts, but maybe really aren't. Mm. So we can talk about that and connect on that. And then of course we do face-to-face Zoom coaching as well as part of that online experience. So, so we are connected because we really do want to be connected with people and feel that connection and really give them the support and understanding and the space that they need.
That's lovely. And I will get to the kids' question, I promise, but because I do want to know. And yet something you just said that sort of sparked another question in me. You said you read between the lines. It sounds like you're highly intuitive as far as dealing in the moment with the people that are learning from you. Is that something that you have cultivated, or is that an innate skill that you have? And if so, how do you teach that innate skill to the people who perhaps work on your team?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very well practiced at it. So I have cultivated it over all these years. I don't think it's necessarily an innate skill. I think it comes from the place of being curious. Mm-hmm. And connecting with people. Mm-hmm. So that's where I mean, back to that original story of me being able to teach somebody to swim across the pool and just having the presence to ask somebody how it is for them. It's that piece of connecting mm-hmm. with the learner. It's not about me and my ego and my list of things to get done. It's about the other person. And so that's where I teach my staff and teach our teachers is about we really have to go over and connect to the student and get curious and inquisitive and really listen to what they're saying and hone in on what their beliefs are about themselves and about the water and who they are as a learner and these sorts of things. So it's really, it's about that curiosity and desire to connect with other people. And I think, you know, maybe a thing that's innate, I don't know. I mean, one of my core beliefs is that we are all perfect at our core being. And so I really, that's when I see people, I'm looking beyond those Christmas lights on the house, looking beyond the bits of glimmer, right? And seeing them as perfect and whole, exactly as they are. And then we put all this stuff over the top of it because we have lots of things of shame and embarrassment and judgment about ourselves, and which is just the normal part of being human that we do that. And so, so that part of me, I mean, that I think kind of relates back to my upbringing in terms of being raised in a faith community and just really seeing people. It's my job to cut to who you really are at your core, which is perfect and whole. I know you are. And so that, yeah, that's what I'm, when I read between the lines, that's what I'm looking for, is that space that, you've got it. You're amazing and beautiful just as you are, kind of thing.
That makes me feel warm and fuzzy. And I don't mean that at all. I'm not being sarcastic at all. I love that idea of loving, really, because that's what it sounds like. You love your students. You truly give them the care and the understanding to find that within themselves because you already see them that way. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful that you do that work. I think it's so, wow. You know, and it's funny because we started talking about being afraid of the water and learning how to do the crawl. And yet here we are talking about something so much a part of that and also deeper than that. And I'm thrilled that you're doing the work that you're doing. And so now finally, I will ask you, you know, kids, I almost want to say kids need love too. What happened or what made you decide to focus more on working with adults as opposed to kids who would probably normally be the ones people teach most because you learn to swim when you're younger for the most part? What made you do that? What made you decide to focus on adults?
Yeah, I mean, the easy answer is I find adults more interesting. So I think it's my desire to do that, this sort of deeper work with kids, like you say, it's what we kind of traditionally think of for swimming lessons. If my real goal was to just go out and create a money machine business, mm-hmm. I'd do kids, right? That's, if that were really my goal, it's just sort of to produce a product that lots of people would buy over and over again and have a machine. It would be the, you know, doing kids, mm-hmm. Swimming, but for my own interest in my, I mean, it's always about us at the end of the day, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I find it more interesting and more transformative working with adults, and kids are wonderful. And there's a lot of really good, kids swim teachers out there. The other thing is, that's kind of a deeper and more true answer is, learning to swim really is a cultural experience as well. Some of it is about going to a swimming lesson, but you know, where I really learned to swim is I really learned to swim because my parents had a friend who, they had a pool, and that's what we did as a family. Our family vacations were based around, you know, water was part of it, going to the lake. And, you know, I grew up in Southern California. And so going to the ocean. And so it was part of my growing up experience. And so for me, really transforming children's swimming lesson is to transform the culture of swimming, which is about their parents and their grandparents and their aunts and their uncles and of really impacting at that kind of level to change generationally, to have it go further and further forward. There's really two decisions that parents make when it comes to swimming. If you as a parent don't know how to swim, parents will either very lovingly make sure their children know how to swim and like put them, if they want to or not, in swimming lessons. Maybe that happened to you since your mom didn't know how to swim. She like fiercely made sure that you knew how to swim by sending you to swimming lessons.
That's not what happened at all.
Okay,
But go on, please go on.
Yeah. Or another choice that parents make is to keep them away, is to keep kids away because it's the way to keep them safe. It's another loving decision to keep them away from the water. I know for sure if you don't go near the water, then nothing's going to happen to you. You're not going to drown. Or I don't have to put you into this system that I don't understand and I can't navigate. And I don't have to go and trust somebody else, you know, trust my beautiful little child to somebody that I don't know or understand. So they're both kind of loving decisions that parents make. But just giving them another way of being, of really deeply understanding the process and knowing how to be in charge of that and being able to systematically move families forward in their, what it means to be safe around the water.
I love how optimistic you are. I think that's such a lovely thing. And this idea, what you just said, you know, moving families forward towards safety near the water, it brings me to another sort of line of questioning, if you will. You mentioned to me right before we started recording this episode that you are expanding, I'd say, your offerings into life coaching. And I would love, especially with everything you've said about self-awareness and agency and no self-judgment and all of that, I would love it if you talk a little bit about what that will look like for you as you move forward into 2021.
Yeah, so we're, this is my endeavor outside of my swim school. The we is the swim school. just in my own brain. But because it really, the reason why people are so successful with our swimming lessons is because we are teaching them about how life works. And like you said, people take the lessons that they've learned in the class and they can apply it to other areas. And so with me leaning into being a life coach is really starting from that side, is starting from where in your life do you want to be pulled forward into your future versus just that repeating the past, being in that habit way of being. You know, it's that idea, the greatest predictor of your future is your past. Mm. And really, how do we break that cycle? So the work that I'm going to start with concentrating on is having people really be pulled forward by their future self, of seeing, like we do with our swim students, okay, you want to jump off the back of the boat, but how do you want that to feel? Who are you going to be in that space to jump off the back of the boat? And that's the stuff that we can work on and build today while you're acquiring the additional skills of being able to jump off the boat. And so for people seeing that in their life today, you know, I want to really be the most amazing parent, or excuse me for a second. Sorry. You know, I want to lose that 10 pounds, as we're recording this in the new year time, and people are all, our brains go to new year's resolutions, right? And those come up. But yeah, you know, who cares if you lose 10 pounds, or who's the judge of you being a good parent, or, you know, loving your marriage or stuff like that. It's really about, who am I going to be? How do I want to feel? Can I be those things today? Because when you get to that place, you could feel just as terrible in that future place as you do right now, unless you do this other work, this deeper work of really seeing what your beliefs are and how you feel and you treat yourself today. And we work on that today. So that'll be the work that I'm doing with the life coaching.
Oh, that sounds lovely. And I would love to find out, I know that there's no place yet, but if there were, what would be a way that someone could get started with you? Is it just find you on one of your social channels? How would somebody, I want to work with Corey Micah on life coaching. How do you think someone would be able to find you? Is there something that you can give me now to help someone who wants to find you to find
you?
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn and I'm on Facebook. Those are the two social channels that I'm on the most. And so certainly those are easy ways. There's also going through at this swim school, through Orca Swim School. That's an easy way to also just get in touch, because my office manager is very good at vetting through those things. So she saw somebody come through and said, "I'm not interested in swimming, but this other thing sounded interesting." She would be happy to get through. I will. It's on my finishing up for the year. Here is the website for the life coaching, and it is. I'm trying to remember the domain I picked up for it. It's just Corey Micah Life Coach, or Life Coaching with Corey Micah. One of those two.
Well,
I just can't remember the domain now. But by the time this publishes, I can
Absolutely.
We can get it in the show notes correctly.
Absolutely. By the time this publishes, we will have everything in on the website, on the show notes, your website, your Facebook, your Instagram. Now, what I have for Facebook and Instagram are all Orca Swim School, right? So facebook.com/OrcaSwimSchool, and Orca like the critter, right? So it's
the whale.
ORCA, the whale. And Orca Swim SCH on Instagram, and then Orca Swim SCH on Twitter also. Do you have personal ones that you want to be on the show notes, or are those the ones people should look for to find you?
Yeah, I mean, if people are interested in the life coaching, they could also go to my personal pages, which we can put those in there too. Which
perfect.
It's LinkedIn at Corey Mica or Facebook, Corey Mica.
Fabulous, that's great.
And message me there. Yeah.
Awesome. So first of all, I'm so grateful that you took the time to talk about this. And I love that I'm a huge water fan. I cannot pass by an ocean without sticking my toes in it, for sure. There's only one time that I hadn't, and that was we were in Iceland in January, and the North Atlantic was just too cold to take off my shoes and get in the ocean there. I'm not a member of the Polar Bear Club. But I'm so grateful, and I'm so thrilled that you are taking this approach of helping people find out more deeply about who they are as they learn how to swim. And it's almost, there's a congruence there. So I'm so grateful that you're doing the work you're doing. And I'm really thrilled that you joined me today to talk about it. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. And your story of not putting your toe in the water there is so perfect for our non-swimmers to know about. It doesn't mean anything about you being a swimmer or not. The fact that you said no to a particular swimming situation.
Yeah. The completely freezing water was enough. I've never been so cold in my life.
Yeah. You're like, no, thank you. But you're still a swimmer. There's nothing to, it's not a big deal at all. Yeah. It's just figuring out what the swimming situation is that's for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I love the water. So I'm thrilled to pieces every time I actually get to get in the water. I have one last question that I ask everybody who's on the show, and I'm always, the answers are often really quite poignant. So, and here's the question. And the question is this: if you had a plane that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
I love this question. I heard you ask another guest it, and my answer came up instantly, which I love too. It is love is central.
Ah, that's wonderful. I love that. First of all, I love that you listen to the show. That's great. And and also, what a great message. Love is central. And this idea, it seems like you really live that in the school, and also your future life coaching clients are going to be very lucky to have you, because that's going to be the approach that you use, I think, with them, as well as the people who learn so much from you in the Orca Swim School. I'm really grateful that you're doing the work you do, Corey. Thank you so much for being here, and what a great answer.
Thank you. I appreciate the time. This was so fun.
Oh,
such great questions and thinking. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was my pleasure. And if you want to know more about Corey Mica and you're listening to this episode, you're going to need to go to various number of things. But there's also a resource for listeners, orcaswimschool.com/product/feel-better-now. If you're listening to this, it's a good resource to start with. There's also the orcaswimschool.com website, a YouTube channel, Facebook. Look at the show notes. Find Corey if you want to learn how to swim and improve your life at the exact same time. Obviously, she's the person you need to be finding. I am Isolde Trachtenberg. I am your host for the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm thrilled that we talked about this innovative way of teaching and learning, and also really self-improvement and self-development here today. If you love the show, and even if you just like the show, I'd love it if you'd let me know. Drop a comment, leave a review, subscribe to the show so that you can keep learning about innovative ways of learning, thinking, and progressing in our lives. Until next time, I invite you to listen, learn, laugh, and love a whole lot. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the podcast if you're new. And if you like what you're hearing, please review it and rate it and let other people know. And if you'd like to be a sponsor of the show, I'd love to meet you on patreon.com/innovativemindset. I also have lots of exclusive goodies to share just with the show's supporters there. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2021. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, keep living in your innovative mindset.